Steen Nauerbeer is going to join us. He's from Faust at the University of Copenhagen, and we need to find your presentation, which I assume is on here somewhere. Yeah. Felix
well,
is going to come and
say.
All right. Thank you very much for inviting me, Sean. I am Steen Nauerbeer. I'm a precarious worker in the high end at Copenhagen University, which means I'm on my fifth 5 years contract now. I've been there for 23 years, but we are in a little bit special situation. My workplace Employment Relations Research Center are solely financed by unions and employers' organizations and the Ministry of Labor, which also means that we constantly are making projects that are of interest of some of the social partners as well. I'm getting back to why I said this a little bit later. First, starting out about what I'm going to talk about today, I don't have a paper. And the reason for that is when Sean and I talked about what I should talk about today, I had gave him different offers. I did have some papers, but I also have this case about Ryanair, but that's an ongoing case, which means I'm not making a paper right now. I'm actually following the case right now, so you get the latest update of this thing as well, but I'm trying to put it a little bit in perspective in some of this, in terms of some of the things we've been talking about today as well. So that's the general point. There's no paper, you can't find it anywhere, but you're probably going to find the slides on the homepage a little bit later, I guess. So let's see how this works. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Danish model, and after that, I'm going to talk a little bit about how foreign companies work in Denmark in general, and then I'm going to end up with Ryanair, which could be an interesting case in this country, I guess. So first, about the Danish model, we have a 2.7 million employees. Unemployment rate is 4.4%, which is considered quite low. When the crisis were on its highest, we had about 5.5 to 6%. 2% is considered a bottleneck, where you have a problem actually getting the workers you need and being able to actually reschool them in different kinds. So that's pretty good. We have a union density of 69%, which is going a little bit down, but pretty high compared to many other countries. We have yellow unions, about 9%, which is becoming a challenge at the moment. If you know, yellow unions are unions that are not part of the old union system with the guilds and so forth. So we also have employers' organizations density of about 58% in the private sector and 100% in the public sector, giving about an average of about 75%. Collective bargaining coverage pretty high as well. We have a lot of SMEs, about 60,000 SMEs are closing down every year, about 55,000 are opening every year. So we are quite a volatile economy in general as well. Union density internationally, we're doing pretty well. Sweden, Finland, and Iceland is a little bit better. Norway is under us here. However, they were considered the most happy people about 2 weeks ago, take over our place there, so they're still doing good. And you see that we see average is about 25%, something like that. So we're doing pretty good in this union density as well. So we have a consensual voluntaristic model, as also was mentioned this morning. We have collective agreements that regulate the major part of the labor market. We have social partners, which are consulted intensively in lawmaking process. And we have a shared understanding of bargaining schedule when renewing the agreements. High level of consensus, and we might say this is a quite coordinated economy in general. I took this one to talk a little bit about work stoppages. Does anybody know whether it's allowed to strike in Denmark? I'm trying to make you interactive now. According to the collective agreement, you cannot strike when the collective agreement is actually running. The moment you start negotiating the collective agreement every 3 years in the industrial sector, you're allowed to strike during that period. But in between that, it's only if your life or safety or your honor is in jeopardy, you're actually allowed to strike. So all these jobs, work stoppages are properly illegal according to the collective agreement, and there's a big fine to the unions when this is happening. We also talked a little bit this morning about minimum wages. That doesn't exist, minimum wages in Denmark. Basically, if anybody wants to clean my house for €2 per hour, please tell me and come to Denmark, then it's actually possible to do. It's only the collective agreements that actually decides that. Those who are not covered by a collective agreement could basically go for a lower wage, but there's so much spillover in the system. So it only says something about how strong the institution of collective agreements actually are here. Coordinated by a market economy, I would say with a liberal twist. When you compare it in the one area, when it comes to flexibility, we're on the level of the UK. With flexibility, we're on the level of the UK, but then we have the security on top of that. Is it dependent on the ongoing cooperation and fine-tuning, which Valerie also mentioned just before? It's a very fine-grained tuning that's taking place in the Flix security system, where Flixy and Curity is balanced out. It can be disturbed with big consequences. And the question is, what is the role of the multinationals? So this has been my interest for about 10 years now. I told you a little bit about how we're financed. I don't get any money to do this. The social partners are not interested. It's a little sad comparing how interesting it is in Ireland and some other countries. And I'm getting back to why they're not interested in a moment. We have about 4,000 foreign companies. It's growing. It's about 1% of the companies in Denmark, but they're actually employing about 20% of the workforce. So it's not a small factor. Average employees are 70 people in a multinational company, in a foreign-owned company, against 4 people in a Danish company. What does that mean? That means they actually are big players. That means they often are member of an employer's organization, and they are big players in this employer's organization as well. So they do have an influence. I'm trying to make my case to the social partners to get some money here, right? So 23% of the total turnover in the private sector is taken care of by foreign companies, going up constantly as well. If you look at how much their turnover is, I'm sorry, it's in Danish, some of these things, I couldn't find it in English in statistics in Denmark, you can see how it works out. You have the Danish companies on the top and you have foreign companies in the bottom. You have the crisis, of course, in 2008, but they were regenerating quite quickly as well. If you look at employment, it's even more interesting. Foreign companies did not fire people during the crisis, which is highly unusual. What normally happens when a foreign company is operating and have subsidiaries in other countries, when crisis comes, you cut off arms and legs and you attract all the research and design and so forth back to the headquarters. Didn't happen in this situation. That's why I don't get money. Here you have also the people employed in foreign companies. You can see which countries they actually are employed in. You have the United States as a major thing. You have Sweden as a big thing, Germany, and Norway, and then you have miscellaneous, about 10%. If you would put this together, you also see a little bit of a tendency here as well. You see a lot of the countries that are operating in Denmark are coming from other coordinated economies as well. If you take the liberal economies, it's quite a lot fewer here as well, right? So we have actually a situation where you can discuss whether this is globalization. We did some qualitative interviews with actors in multinational companies, and one of the companies, the HR manager, said, "So why are you interviewing me? Because I'm in a Nordic multinational." I said, "Well, according to our list, you have these many people in two different subsidiaries in the foreign countries." "Yeah, but we're not really multinational, we're Nordic." Something of the same things could said about some IS, could be said about some Irish multinationals, which are very connected to the United States. So you have some situations where the culture, the language, etc., so that's very close. So really multinational, maybe we should discuss that word actually also, if a company actually is multinational or actually is regional instead as well. Danish companies abroad, 12,000 Danish subsidiaries. We actually employ 1.3 million people abroad. It's quite a lot. You know, the biggest companies probably, Maersk is one of the bigger companies, and then we have Lego, also employing quite a few people around the world, and then other things as well. Outsourcing, we outsourced about 16,000 jobs from 2009 to 2011, but 4,000 of them actually were high-end jobs. So it's not only going that way, we actually would like it to go as well. About the multinationals' influence, Margis and Amiati, you probably know some of the text as well, say the influence is big and growing, not least due to their size. That is also a little bit my point, that they are big players in different countries. Regime shopping, perhaps not as systematic as expected. It's more like ad hoc regime shopping, the fact that they actually try to find out which country is the best. I think this one is changing quite a lot at the moment. I think actually they do a due diligence in many countries and see what they get out of the money investing in a certain country. Wages are actually higher in multinationals than they are in domestic companies, and working conditions are often a little bit better. I did some research together with one of my colleagues as well, when we asked 120 HR managers in MNCs about how they looked upon the Danish system, how they looked about cooperation and so forth. First of all, when we sent out the 120 questionnaires in English and in Danish, we got 117 back in Danish. And that's already a result, a very important result, actually, because that just goes to show that the HR managers in these companies actually are optimistic managers who knows how the Danish model works, et cetera, right? They are kind of a buffer for whatever the multinational wants to do, and often negotiating as well, we found out in some of the qualitative research. 5% of the multinationals have a negative view on unions. 84% meet all demands in labor law. 54% claim to deliver more than labor law actually asked them to do of these managers. And we saw no significant difference between US firms and firms originating in coordinated market economies. So you see my problem here. I want money. Nobody wants to give money when everything is doing very well, right? So here comes Ryanair flying, and I'm all happy. So what happened was in 2012, Ryanair establishes a base in Jutland, in Billund. You probably don't know wherever that is, but pretty much in the center of the peninsula of Denmark. So they did it quite successfully. The union actually tried to get the workers to go against Ryanair, but they didn't succeed. The workers were not for that. They actually saw their job opportunities here as well. 2014, Ryanair announces its establishment of bases in Copenhagen. And here we have a cultural difference between Jutland and Copenhagen. They might be members of the same unions, but the union in Copenhagen is much stronger, much more militant, and have used the fact that they are logistically that Copenhagen Airport is logistically very important and workers actually can do something in Copenhagen that has effect of a lot of people. So they were not happy about Ryanair coming in. 2015, the 3rd of January, the Flying Personnel Union and the Danish Confederation of Unions demand a collective agreement for personnel on the Copenhagen base, and Ryanair refuses. You have the right to ask any company to go into negotiations about a collective agreement, and the company basically have to go into the negotiations with it. Turns out in anything or not. 3rd of February, ILO, the Confederation and FPU notifies industrial action. Ryanair does not accept that notice. The unions ask Labour Court to acknowledge the notice, and 18th of March, first Ryanair is flying out of Copenhagen. So what happened here was that they actually thought about peeling off the wings of the Ryanair plane. There were 200 workers in the airport, and only because of the shop stewards told them not to do this. We can't do this because if you do that, it's going to cost us a billion trillion. Because if they're not going to fly, and Labour Court say that they actually have the case on their side, then we're going to lose a lot of money and we have to pay every kind of renomination and a fine as well. So they decided to let Ryanair start flying the 18th of March, and that went through Labour Court as well. 26th of March, Ryan put a base in Copenhagen meeting. There was a meeting in Labour Court. 15th of June, cases presented in Labour Court. 1st of July, Labour Court rules. It took quite some time. They were actually able to fly for almost 5 months before the Labour Court actually ruled. The whole case was lasting 11 hours. They were negotiating in Labour Court. I was present about 6 hours. I couldn't last any longer. They started 2 o'clock, they ended 1 o'clock at night. But I read the verdict after that, and the verdict came out with 41 pages. They basically ruled that LO, FPU, the unions, may initiate industrial action to obtain a collective agreement. They also said, and this was very important, that a person who's living in a certain country, who actually has family life in that country, is also in that country that labor law and industrial relations should apply. So that means if you're flying, the whole point from Ryanair was 98% of the time they're actually flying in an Irish registered airplane over other countries. But Labour Court said this, and they even wrote on page 39, don't try this in any other country. This is going to work all over the EU, because they wanted to try it in other courts as well. So what also happened, this is a little story. Now, I know we're taping, so maybe I shouldn't say that, but LO called me because I was on TV and radio because of this, because I had to comment on these things, and I said this could be a threat to the Danish model. So LO called me the day before the verdict and said, you know, you're saying a little bit too much about this is the threat of the Danish model. So this has nothing to do with the Danish model. It's a little corner of the Danish model that is very special. So 18 minutes after the verdict was here, then LO FBO claimed victory for the Danish model. So that's how politics are as well, I guess. So 17th of July, actually first Ryanair threatened the personnel and said, you know, we're going to take out the base. We're not going to fly from Copenhagen whatsoever. You have one last chance to actually accept that we have a base here without any collective agreement. They said no. They had the court on their side. And 17th of July, Ryanair abolishes bases in Copenhagen and moves to Kaunas, Lithuania. That's where the whole thing ended, I thought. But then something new happened as well. First, we had three wins for the labor movement. First, juridically, industrial relations for employees living in that country applies. That was very important and a juridical thing. Media-wise and public-wise, the public was actually sympathizing a lot with the unions, or at least the stewardesses. I'm not quite sure in this situation. But the point is here, they were very good at telling the story. So the labor unions actually have 8 full-time employed communication experts trying to find out how we should tell this story. And the basic bottom line in the story is there's a dragon, that's Ryanair, there's a princess, that's the stewardesses, and there's a knight in white armor that is going to be the union. And that's how they told the story, and that's how they followed this line all the way through, simply. So, lastly, but not leastly, they actually got a recruitment in the Flying Personnel's Union. I think people were aware how vulnerable they were in this situation, actually became members of this as well. Now, round two, winter 2016-2017, and that's when I talked to you and said, I think we have an interesting case here. It was actually before something more happened. But I said to Sean, you know, it's kind of interesting because they actually still fly a lot in Copenhagen. They fly from Kaunas 5 o'clock in the morning, they land in Copenhagen 6:30, they fly to London 7 o'clock, and then they fly around in the whole Europe, and then they end in Copenhagen 9 o'clock in the evening and fly to Kaunas and put the plane and the stewardesses there. I don't know whether they actually earn money. I have no idea. I also think O'Leary had an idea here that he wanted to show. There's this little country in the north of Denmark, to the north of Europe, that we can just, you know, show them we can still fly there. So right now they're flying here. I was not flying with Ryanair over here. I really can't do that because if I meet any union representative in the airport, I might be in trouble. But anyway, they actually do fly a lot in Copenhagen right now. They are also now having 2 million passengers within less than 2 years. They are the third biggest carrier in Copenhagen right now. They are 1 year ahead of their own schedule about when they should meet this. And what happened 1st of February, and that's where the story becomes interesting again, is SAS, this old, partly state-owned company, decided to create bases in London and Malaga as well. They're simply copycatting Ryanair here. So 16th of February, I don't know if you heard about that, the European Parliament has a resolution about the aviation strategy, which means they want to have equal competition between airline carriers all over Europe, which means they have an idea that maybe sometime along the line, all these 27 countries would agree about something about airlines should compete on the same level. Good luck about that. So, what did SAS said? You can read that yourself. It's good that politicians take initiative to assure their competition in aviation, but also very clearly they think it came way too late. So this is what the actually employers are saying. The employers' organizations were totally quiet during the whole Ryanair case in 2015. They didn't say one word. If you asked them very secretly late at night after 3 beers, they would probably say, we really want Ryanair to lose this case. Because they did perceive it as a threat towards this orderly relationship. But you can't say that as an employer when another employer is in court with the union. But because of the Danish model, they were interested in that as well. Here, now this time, actually one of their employers came out and said, this is rule shopping that is happening right now. Now SAS is rule shopping as well. This old company that is the main operator in the Nordic countries are doing exactly the same thing as Ryanair as well. Now comes the difficult part here. You've got to hear O'Leary as well. I hope.
We won't be making collective agreement with the Danish unions. Not our people. Our people don't want to collective agreement with the Danish unions. So the Danish model and the Danish unions have completely failed. They're now seeing their jobs being exported to the UK and Spain. Whereas at the time, Ryanair was bringing jobs for pilots and cabin crew up here to Copenhagen. So we won't change. The Danish unions will change.
Whether Ryanair is going to open a base in Copenhagen.
We're going to base one or two aircraft back here in Copenhagen and see what the SAS unions do then. We think it would be quite interesting if the SAS unions are trying to blockade Ryanair's aircraft here in Copenhagen when we're creating jobs in Denmark at a time when they're working with the Danish unions that have failed. It's the Danish model that has failed. That's why SAS is now exporting Danish jobs to the UK and to Spain.
So, O'Leary, he flew in. Yeah, O'Leary flew in to say this, basically. When he heard that SAS was opening bases in London and Malaga, he flew in, made this interview to everybody who was interested. This is actually the unskilled union main journal and homepage. So he made this basically to simply state the point here. And it's very clear what he thinks actually happened there, right? Well, some of the things I think is worth discussing in this situation is very much that CMEs, like the Danish model, seems to be very strong on their own premises, but the moment they are exposed to real globalization, they seem pretty weak, actually, right? There might be some problems, even though one of the strongest models, everybody has emphasized today during the day, you know, Denmark, Sweden, Norway is always up in that corner, right, as you saw in your presentation. But it seems like we're a little bit vulnerable here. Round one, Danish model won, round one on home ground, but Ryanair is still flying more than ever through Copenhagen. Round two, when the model is not strong enough to fend off Ryanair, we cry for help in the EU. But what about the voluntaristic model I just talked about in the beginning? The whole point is that the social partners should take care of everything themselves, but now they can't. And what are we going to do? We're going to cry for the EU to help us about this. So points to discuss, I think, is Ryanair a special case, highly mobile labor, rather interchangeable personnel, or will the same happen to other industries? Tentative conclusion could be that SMEs are strong on national terms, but weak when exposed to international competition and pressure. And the national hope about this particular case is that Copenhagen as a hub is going to exist continuously. The air is pretty thin around, over the Nordic countries, meaning there's not a lot of planes flying as there are around Frankfurt and so forth. Have you tried to go around for about 15 minutes before you're allowed to land in some countries? That doesn't happen that often in Denmark, but it happens more and more actually because we are winning more and more customers. Copenhagen Airport is very strong in this regard. Personally, I don't have a lot of... You can like Ryanair, you cannot like Ryanair, but what's happening right now is not different from what's happening in many other cases we have seen before. We saw the textile workers in many countries lose their job in the Nordic countries and go first to Portugal and then to the Far East. We see it with other things like ticket handling. We see it with all kind of desktop publishing is moving to Pakistan as well. I'm not sure this is so different. It's just more exposed. This case is more exposed. Everybody knows stewardesses and they look nice when you get into the plane. You actually talk to them. You didn't talk to the textile workers back then. This is competition, and my best bet, which I probably shouldn't say loud, is that this Danish personnel and planes might disappear within the next 10 years. It might also be that the public was with the Danish personnel as well, but it turns out that actually they do sell 2 million tickets a year for some reason, right? It's a little bit like when we buy chicken and we don't buy the farmer chicken, the ecological farmer chicken, right? We think it's a very good idea when we answer the questionnaire, we think we should. And we go down and buy the cheapest we can find, right? And the same thing happened here. They had a questionnaire about whether they supported Ryanair or SAS. And everybody writes SAS, of course, because Ryanair was a dragon. That's how LO did it. And now they turn out when you have to have the cheap ticket, you go to London with Ryanair instead. Yeah. Just the last little thing here. This is the best countries to do business in, according to The Economist. They make this every 2 or 3 years or something like that. We're doing pretty well. Sweden is a little bit better than us, but we have very much what we also see here. Then we have what I would say coordinated market economies here, right? So when you take the whole thing into consideration, you talk about the quality of labor, the education that the labor actually does have, the level of corruption, the political system, the taxes, which are really bad in Denmark, as you'd say. Then it turns out that this is actually one of the best countries in the world to do business in, and they all coordinated market economies as well. I think that's quite interesting, but I also think it's really dangerous what's happening right now, because if this develops into more, then we might not be as attractive anymore, because then we have high wages, we have high taxes, but we're also kind of losing jobs. And our big challenge right now is we're moving off the value chain. We have about 160 to 250,000 people who's going to be obsolete in 2020 because they don't have the right education. So the main thing in the last collective agreement was a huge amount of money to educate these people. If that doesn't happen, then the jobs are moving out of the country very fast and very easily. Of course, Ryanair, or the whole flying business, is very special because the actual labor is moving around. But a lot of things can be exported as well if we don't have the right education and so forth. But right now, it looks like we're doing fine, if only the people who are going to invest in us understand this. I also would like to say Ryanair is absolutely special. We have, as I said, 4,000 companies in Denmark, foreign companies, and we hear about one case. It's a really, really big case, but we hear about one case. But we also see the moment one of the companies are exposed to this competition, they decide to do exactly the same thing as the other ones do. All right. Thank you for quiet with me.
Okay, we have time for some questions, maybe 10, 15 minutes.
You just said Ryanair is a special case, but I have a question that's kind of informed by my, just a very personal question that I have about, you know, this whole model of deregulation and airline and so on. Mm. And you're sort of suggesting that it's going to be the same pattern as textiles and things like that. But it just seems to me that there has to be some limit to the potential for deregulation in the airline industry. I mean, you've got more planes in the air, more people flying, much greater dependence on, you know, air traffic control and things like that. Is there, you know, is the end of Ryanair going to be some awful tragedy that involves sort of loss of life that's going to get people to say, well, actually, we need to go back to a more regulated model of business, because, you know, low prices are all well and good, but at the end of the day, I'd rather be safe.
I'm not here to defend Ryanair.
No, I know you're not.
Saying Ryanair have never had any case whatsoever, and they're very particular about that. They have some kind of honor codex, actually, because 2-3 days after this was a big case in Denmark, I was called by a Danish newspaper to ask me if I got gotten a letter from the lawyers from Ryanair. No, I'm on holiday. I was in Valencia at that time. I got a little bit worried, to be honest, right? Because I also thought, okay, did I say anything that actually, you know, that I couldn't prove, that I didn't have any valid research behind or something like that? It turned out that there were some other researchers that had talked about safety in the air. There were some other researchers that had talked about slave-like relations and so forth. I never used any of these words. There were no letter in my postbox when I got back. But I had a couple of days where I actually was searching on the internet who was to defend me. Was it actually the Copenhagen University, or was it my own case, right? But they have no cases, and it seems like they have no cases. A lot of other companies actually might have cases, right? Norwegian actually leased some pilots that really had problems landing a plane. So there are other companies that have, no one mentioned Norwegian, and they might get another letter. But anyway, it could be the end of it. I don't know, but as it is right now, there's no cases as such.
It's actually a general question about whether or not patterns of deregulation that we've been talking about in workplaces are actually viable in all kinds of sectors and all kinds of workplaces.
I think only imagination, you know, ends it, right? Because about 10, 15 years ago, it was the most fantastic job to be a stewardess or pilot, right? And now everybody knows they are in deep trouble, right? So I think it's only about imagination. Somebody finds it. I mean, everything is leaning all over the world all the time, and it is like copycatting, and the information is going faster and faster from one country to another. We have also seen, I'm doing interviews with employers or organizations right now, and they're simply employers organizations that have lost the whole constituency within 5 years because of new technology. So suddenly, I mean, we have no desktop publishers in Denmark, almost no desktop publishers in Denmark. So what did they do? They go for the commercial companies, the PR companies, and say, we want these guys instead, right? Because they still want to live as an organization, so to speak, right? But desktop publishing is out. It doesn't, I mean, there are 5 or 10 companies, but it's out in Denmark right now because of new technology, because you can send it through the computer to Pakistan and everywhere else. And it's just going to continue with the technology. I don't think there's a stoppage to that, I'm afraid. But I think in some countries, it seems like we are able to move up the value chain, but it takes, you know, a coordinated market economy to do that, to be honest, is my best guess, right? Because if you don't cooperate between the unions and the state and the employers about, we have to lift the educational level of the workers right now, because the average wage in Denmark right now is something like 22, 25 euros, something like that. And then comes pension and everything for blue collar worker. That's not competitive unless you have an education and you can do something else, right? So we have to do that. And that's possible in coordinated market economy. I'm more nervous about the liberal market economies, to be honest.
Okay, Patricia King from Congress of Trade Unions. Firstly, thank you for your presentation, which I found very interesting. Secondly, I feel your pain in relation to Ryanair. Just in case you thought that we didn't, or that Ireland didn't react, or workers in Ireland didn't react, I mean, we have a voluntary system here. We don't have a right to strike, but if you do go on strike, you have the right to immunities within legislation, which means you can go on strike if you follow certain procedures. Mm-hmm. We don't have the trade union density that you have, regrettably, but we did have many altercations with this company, which eventually ended up with a case into the Labour Court, very much on your own. And what he succeeded in doing, actually, he wouldn't... And this is well documented. This is I happen to be personally involved in it, so obviously I know it very well, but it is well documented. But just in terms of mirroring, actually, some of what you said, I mean, what the company did was they went into the Labour Court, wouldn't take the outcome of the Labour Court, which went against them, went to the High Court. That case went against them in the High Court, wouldn't take accept it, and they went to the Supreme Court. They obviously have a lot of money, very deep pockets, and they ended up with the Supreme Court making a judgment which actually overturned every piece of collective bargaining legislation or anything remotely that might protect a worker. He ended up and upending the whole shoot and bang. Mm-hmm. So workers ended up in 2007 with no right to do anything really. And it followed actually, and it's interesting from the precarious work discussions we had this morning, very quickly after he did it, other companies, particularly in the accommodation and food, who would be lined up very much with the precarious work type arrangements, they started going in to follow up. They took down the Joint Labour Committee legislation. They took down in the construction industry the registered employment agreements, following on from what he had done in the Supreme Court. Now, we went in and at the time there was a sort of a social partnership. It's now gone, but it was in existence. And the trade unions went in and fought hard to get a scenario whereby we could lobby the political parties to get replacement legislation. And actually we ended up over a period of years. It took longer than we had expected, but we ended up with better legislation. Now, that sickens him. Do you know what I mean? But that's who cares about that? I certainly don't anyway. But the legislation is actually better. He's no interest in trade unions per se. But apart from that, actually, I have myself represented people on an individual basis that work there, and some of the practices are appalling, shocking. But he only employs actually 8% of his workforce are in Ireland. The rest of them are either in the UK or abroad. But the final thing I would say to you is, in the airline industry, and I have a bit of knowledge of it, but there's another... now, we have Norwegian Airlines, who have now decided to use Ireland as a base. They've decided to... And the American unions fought very hard, in fairness, for the last 7 years to stop it. And Obama, for some reason or other, in the final days of his presidentship, he signed the order to allow Norwegian Airlines to come into Europe. And, I mean, their bottom line is they want to have Asian-paid workers pay them on Asian rates and use them in Europe and ignore the terms and conditions that are accepted across Europe that should apply. So there's a trend starting to happen as well, and it's the push for... And you're right, customers respond to the lowest price ticket, and he knows that, and so does Norwegian Airlines. And the Norwegian airline market now is to compete with those who are going to America and cross the Atlantic to get cheaper airline tickets there so that they can take that market. Mm-hmm. He hasn't a huge interest in it, but he is also that company, Ryanair, is well known for cannibalising on routes. And so from that point of view, my major concern actually wasn't actually in your presentation what he does, because we've long learned to sort of be immunise ourselves, that sort of stuff. It's the reaction and the culture that it builds in low pay certain sectors that operate in the economy. They start to, in some shape or form, develop this precariat. They're not able to carry it off the way he does, but they're able to behave very badly. And actually they develop a culture that it's okay to behave very badly. And you're usually talking about workers who are on very low pay, low hours, major fear factor. Joining the union is something that would, well, if you join the union, you may as well give up your job, because you'll be handed your P45 fairly fast. So that's the sort of culture. That's one of the worst pieces that actually he sort of contaminated a certain part of the labour market in Ireland with that stuff. I could say a lot more, but I won't. Thanks.
I didn't hear a question, but I think you made your point. A couple of comments to your comment. I think it would be so. This cannibalism thing has been discussed a lot in our case as well. Everybody, including the unions, are very careful to say anything about cannibalism because the amount of people going through Copenhagen Airport is just expanding by the day. Even during the crisis, they were just keeping the level actually through 3 years. So nobody dares to say anything about that, and we don't have the numbers because you can't prove whether it's cannibalism or not, whether you're actually taking other routes or not. I'm having two big movements here. So that's a big question, whether it's actually happening or not. In the Danish case, at least, I don't know about the Irish case, of course. The other thing is I made an interview actually with the shop stewards this summer, which was about something else, but of course we talked about Ryanair as well. And now the union seems to have settled with the fact that Ryanair is one of the companies that is feeding a lot of customers to the big lines. As he said, when they come in just from London to Copenhagen, they don't spend any money because they spend like 40 euro on the ticket and they don't want to buy a sandwich or anything. They're really bad customers for Copenhagen Airport. Copenhagen Airport is one big entity, security, everything you sell. It's one of the biggest shopping markets actually in Copenhagen as well. So they look upon it like that. So bad customers are the ones going from London to Copenhagen for 40 euro. Good customers are the ones going from Copenhagen to London and on to Southeast Asia and the United States, because when you already have paid maybe 500 or 1,000 euro for tickets, then you're going to spend a lot of money on your sandwich or whatever you buy in the airport. So they're beginning to see these small companies, the companies they actually do hate, as companies that are feeding to the other lines and actually do create jobs at ground. What they don't like is the way they operate. And that's that dilemma, to be honest, right? And I think it's a dilemma to, again, there's a lot of other business where you could make exactly the same calculations. You know, we are, everybody of us, we buy football shoes and everything to our kids from Adidas, and where are they made at the end? In China somewhere, right? And we discuss that labor as well, it's just not visible in the same way as Ryanair is, and it's just in our backyard, so to speak, right? So I think also we have a discussion here, and I think it's more about a consumer question. If you can change the consumers, I think you can change this thing. You can't change the consumers, which are us. And who can deny that you go on some kind of homepage and find the cheapest ticket sometimes to get to wherever you want to go? We do. And if we don't change our behavior, and we are the most, probably the most reflected people here, right? Only us here, of course. But I mean, we should react differently, and we don't. So we have a big chance there, right? We have to really to change the whole way of understanding how you create a business and how people are earning money. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I was just to follow up on what has been said until now on the business model that Ryanair present, okay, except that they are quite subsidized and they don't say it, okay, but because we don't pay, even as customer, when we pay 40 euro a ticket or 19.99 euro a ticket, we don't pay the real price, nobody pay the real price of a ticket. So, but this is a business model that is put advanced in order part of the market. And what strikes me was, for example, one of the last communication of Uber saying that, by the way, perhaps their business model don't need to be created around self-employed or bogus self-employed workers, and they could perhaps hire directly, and they do in other country than the UK, where they had this fight, they could hire directly workers. Mm. So on the one hand, there is an explanation very macro, scientifically based on the economy, saying that this is a business model that is successful, because Michael O'Leary claim is successful. But on the other hand, in a way, they accept that they create their own business model to, you know, and they create unfair competition for other businesses. So certainly as customer, we should behave better, but as employers and employers' organization, they should behave better.
Mm. Yeah. That was basically a comment, I take it as, yeah. just a little funny thing about that. Uber closed down in Copenhagen 6 days ago. There was a new taxi law passed, and they asked to have a sensor inside the car and a meter, and that basically killed them at the end. So Uber is out of Denmark right now. So we're still protecting the Danish model, but again, Uber was also an example of somebody who came in and actually was able to be there for 2 years. Now they can't make a base in Kaunas, I guess, so it might not be the same problem there. But yeah.
In terms of time, just one more question.
Yeah, just I think it's very much in line with what Isabella said. I mean, a business model, I would call it like a normalization models, because at the end of the day, what you were saying in terms of, you know, these tickets cost very low. I mean, in other words, it looks to me that people have been made poor in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing they can do is to buy this kind of tickets. Now, if we make a comparison between what in the airlines sector is and the food, I think was also recalled before. I mean, well, of course, I think it's the same thing. I mean, sometimes, you know, well, I've been kind of in Germany a couple of, I think was weeks ago, and talking with some friends, they say, you know, that there are all these bios kind of shops at the very moment, and we were discussing about who buys these bio products, which are, you know, a bit more expensive, which shouldn't be the case because this is a normal kind of standard. Say, yeah, in fact, then at the end of the day, for example, with a salary of, you know, in Germany, very low, what this mother can do, or rather than, you know, paying for €2, for example, a piece of chicken or, you know, a piece of cabbage, they buy the chicken, although this is not, of course, this is not bio. So in other words, what I want to say is that, you know, business model, probably also the way how we have been normalized in this kind of a system, which is unacceptable, really, I mean, from a social point of view. So it's really, yeah.
I take it as a point, as a comment as well.
As a comment, yeah.
I just want to finish off with one thing. I flew from Copenhagen to London early Thursday morning, and one of the stewardesses apparently met a former colleague who is now sitting in one of the seats, and they discussed for about 10 minutes about what was happening. And she said, yeah, now our company is opening bases in London and Malaga. But I do understand them. I don't know what else they should do. So, I mean, I think they do get the point here, right? And she also, they discussed on, and she said, you know, the competition is impossible, so our company have to do that. But of course she didn't like it, but actually the stewardess INSAS got the business model for better and for worse. Whether that is good or bad, I don't know, but she got the point at least. So, all right, thanks for your questions.